Hey, you guys, it's my Tomes of Terror book review show. Actually, the first take I did is that I think I said Tomes of Horror. Yeah, my hair is terrifying. So today we're doing a book that actually I read for the first time a long time ago, and I remembered really liking it, so I wanted to kind of like reread it for this series just to see if I, if it still held up and all these other things. So it's interesting because this is kind of hard to, the genre of this is a little bit hard to pinpoint. This book is actually called The Rainy Season by James P. Blaylock. Now, I didn't know a lot about this author. This book was actually given to me as a present from a friend of mine. Jeez, I don't even remember when. Like early 2000s, like early to mid 2000s, sometime around there. And by someone who a friend of mine who was really into kind of like more fantasy than horror. And I think James P. Blaylock, just from a cursory look through his other work, it seems like he's more known as a fantasy writer. He writes a lot of fantasy, a lot of steampunk type of stuff, which is cool. It's not usually my preferred genre. This book, though, I'm not entirely sure. I don't know if I'd call it a horror novel exactly, but I don't know if I'd call it a fantasy novel either. It's almost kind of like a ghost story, but like magical realism type of thing. Like it's set in the real world, but it does have some kind of like magical or ghostly sort of aspect to it. And it's more like atmospheric and kind of like has a spooky atmosphere rather than being like scary. So in that sense, I don't know if I'd call it a horror novel, but it's still like pretty good. Although I will say that it's weird because I had set this one aside. I don't remember if you guys watched my TBR video, like that I made back in January, whenever I made it, where I had like this big pile of books that I was, gonna review for the year. And I had some that I hadn't read before that I had just bought and I was gonna like review for the show. And then I had like a little pile of books that I had previously read, and still had them in my collection and I wanted to like reread them for the show. And this was one of those. And the interesting thing though, when I started rereading this, because I remember like really liking this one, so setting it aside specifically, because I'm like, oh, I want to reread this one for the show. But then when I started reading it, I'm like, I don't think this is the book that I thought that it was. So I'm not really entirely sure like what the book was, because I, for whatever reason, I had just like I remembered like the title, and I remembered I didn't reread the back or anything like that, and then so I didn't exactly remember what it was about. But when I was like reading it, I was like, this is not the book that I thought that it was, you know what I mean? So it was just like this really weird experience because I'm reading it going, what the hell? I don't remember any of this. But it's just kind of like, okay. So I'm just like saying that right now. This is more like a book about like atmosphere and more like a little bit more of like a magical realism type thing. So it's not, it is kind of ghostly in that sense, but it's not like super, super scary. It's more like an atmospheric, kind of sprawling historical type of thing. So let me see if I can explain what's going on in this because it kind of like jumps back and forth. So what we have sort of, I want to say like the main through line, I guess, is set in the present day. I think this came out in 1999, if I'm not mistaken. Let me like look because I thought it was 1999, but it might have been like later than that. 1999 was like the first, 1999, 2000, yeah. It's set in the present day in Southern California. And we're following a dude named Phil Ainsworth, who's kind of like, he's a nature photographer, and he's kind of like a loner type of dude. Like, he doesn't really have a family or anything like that. And he seems like pretty happy with that. He lives in, his mother has died, so he lives in sort of like the old rambling like family home, which is kind of in a remote part of Southern California, like near some mountains or a creek or whatever. And so he's kind of living out there like, just his bachelor life, and he's just like living very quietly and quite happy about it. And then it so happens that his twin sister Mary Ann, who has been living in Austin, Texas, passes away. She's struggled all her life with, mental health issues and things of that nature. But, when he's contacted to tell her that she's died, it's like it doesn't appear to be suicide. It looks like it was a stroke, so it was just like a natural, even though she wasn't very old. Problem being, well, not a problem necessarily, but Mary Ann had a 10-year-old daughter named Betsy. And in her will, which he had signed and agreed to like several years prior, she has said, if anything happens to me, I would like custody of Betsy to go to my brother, Betsy's uncle. So since Mary Ann has now died, near the beginning of the book, book, you know, we find out that Phil has now inherited his niece and is going to be her guardian from this point forward. It's kind of hard to say because this book, like I said, kind of jumps back and forth in time a lot. And as I said, this is, I don't even think like the first scene of the book. I think the first scene of the book is like set back in the 1800s. And the first scene of it, you're kind of introduced to this group of people who you're led to believe are some kind of weird, like, spiritualist cult, I guess. And they have this thing where if you, there's this, the reason it's called the rainy season, because like I said, I'm kind of struggling to, like, put all of this together, but you know what I mean? The reason the book's called the rainy season is because in Southern California, you know, usually it's kind of, like, dry, but every so often you get, like, this really, really rainy season and there's all these flooding and stuff like that. So the premise behind this book is that every time that there's one of these rainy seasons with all this flooding, that there's some kind of like magical association between the water and this sort of ritual that this spiritualist cult used to do in this area. And what they would do is that they would sacrifice a child by putting them like in a kind of a wooden box and like lowering them into this well, and drowning them ritually. And this not only... I'm not real sure about how the mechanics of this work, and I don't know if that's just because, like, I didn't read it right or, you know, or it's not very clear, because it's kind of vague, like, how the magic works in this. But doing this somehow opens up essentially a time portal in the sense that if you go into this well or something like that, like you can jump ahead in time, but you can only come out of the well like in the future in some other year that was another rainy season. You know what I'm saying? And you're not entirely sure. You can't do it like on purpose because sometimes you jump in there and, you know, you don't come out like during the next rainy season. You might come out like several rainy seasons down the stretch. You know what I mean? So you're just kind of like floating around in this limbo, essentially. Another thing that it does, which is another kind of big aspect of the plot, is that apparently when you go into the well or when you go into the water, it produces a sort of trinket. It's usually made of glass, or I think sometimes like some people's were metal, but they're these sort of like magical objects that trap like a piece of the person's memory in them. And it's like when people know what they are and like touch them, you can essentially live that person's memory. So I guess the reason that like sacrificing a child into this particular, into the water makes like a specifically very powerful trinket, because I guess when an adult does it or just goes in by their own accord or whatever, it just kind of like pops out. So these glass objects, they sort of have a shape, but not. There's a couple of them that they talk about in the book, like Betsy has one that sort of looks like an inkwell, but an inkwell that's sort of like been in a fire, like it's sort of like melty looking, but it sort of suggests that. There's another one, like one of the big ones that they're looking for, that kind of popped out from the girl being sacrificed back in the 1800s, is sort of like blue glass, and it sort of looks like a dog laying down, but like not exactly. He kind of describes it as like looking like a cloud formation, like, you know what I mean, where it just kind of suggests that kind of shape. So that's kind of like another sort of thing that's going on. So the story sort of jumps back and forth between the modern day with Phil Ainsworth in this house. And this house is kind of like where this, like next to where this well is, like the well is on his property and he doesn't really know any of the history of it. And in also in the present day, there's also like a couple of people, like there's a priest like at this mission. And then there's like this guy who owns an antique shop. And then like this hot young woman that works for him, that's also just kind of like out for money. So she's looking for these particular trinkets. I don't think at first that she knows what they do. I think she just knows that this antique dealer guy, who's like an old man, knows what they are and he'll pay a lot of money for them. So she's kind of going out looking for them too. She's just this very like matter of fact, all she gives a shit about is money. And she just like tries to manipulate people into like finding these particular things. So you have that going on where there's this kind of thing where there's all these people looking for these particular trinkets for whatever reason. Like the old guy that runs that runs the antique shop is looking for it because he's one of the travelers who has come through the well, and he and I guess the girl that was sacrificed a long time ago was like his daughter, and so he's looking for this blue dog trinket because he thinks that he'll be able to transfer her consciousness or all of her memories or something like that into another person so he can get his daughter back. So there's that kind of thing going on. So there's all these kind of people looking for these trinkets. And then there's also sort of like, I don't even know if it's a subplot, but it's just kind of like another kind of plot. So there's kind of like a lot of villains in this. That's kind of one thing. Also, like I said, there's this whole subplot with Phil Ainsworth, the uncle, and his niece, Betsy, who comes out to, you know, to California to live with him because the sister has died. And back in Austin, Texas, Marianne, the twin sister, she had this neighbor, this kind of like busybody, like old hefty woman named Mrs. Darwin, Hannah Darwin. And she has apparently taken it upon herself that she wanted custody of Betsy. And she is kind of like, not entirely there either, like mentally. She seems like a little bit of a nutcase. And so she's kind of like, there, you know, there comes a point in the story where she kind of like comes to California, like trying to get Betsy back. So she's also like an antagonist. So like I said, and I feel like there's a lot of antagonists like going on. So the thing that I don't know, like I remember liking this book the first time I read it, and I still liked it this second time, but I think I didn't like it as much, maybe because, like I mentioned earlier, that I had forgotten, like, what, I guess when I started reading this book, I thought it was, like, a different one, but I can't remember, like, which one. It must have been some other novel that I read around the same time that I might have gotten associated with this one somehow, and then just, like, it stuck in my memory that the story from that one was the story from this one, but I can't remember what it was. But I don't know why that happened, because when I started reading this, I was like, I didn't remember any of the stuff. Like, I kind of remembered something about a well, and I remembered something about, like, kind of ghosts, which this kind of has a ghostly little bit of stuff going on. Not straightforward, because it's more like the ghosts or the whatever are like based around the objects, you know what I'm saying? Like if an object is like really powerful, then somebody can, you know, pick them up and feel their memory, or they can kind of like see them, sort of, you know what I mean, like kind of shimmering in the air. But it's not so much that they're ghosts, it's just kind of like their memories that are lingering and like someone else can access them. And then there's also kind of like, and I had completely forgotten about the time jumping aspect, because that's kind of another thing that's going on too, is that some back in the 1800s, I think it's 1884 or something like that, there were this group of people that knew what this spiritualist group was up to about like the sacrificing of the children and, you know, producing these memory trinkets, and they knew that it would open a time portal. So three people, like a guy named Colin O'Brien and then two women named May and Jeanette, they actually went through the time portal sort of on purpose, accidentally, kind of, you know, that was kind of like a skirmish or whatever, and it sort of ended up happening. And then some of them turned up in different time periods. So it's almost kind of like, you know, there comes a point where later in the story, like one of them kind of like turns up and they're like looking for the other ones. So there's kind of like, I mean, this book, it's not short, it's probably like 400 something pages, but there's like a lot going on. And I do kind of feel like this book is more, I feel like it's more based around atmosphere and about evoking a sense of place, which it's actually really very good at. Because I guess James P. Blaylock, I guess he's from the Southern California area, so he's very good at evoking this kind of spooky, like, you know, these remote, like up in the mountains with all these like little creeks and, you know, and particularly like all, you know, during rainy seasons when it's just all rain and there's just like water everywhere and this well overflowing. And it's like, I like the association between water and ghosts and memory and stuff like that. I think that's like really cool and like really evocative. Like I really like the idea of these kind of trinkets that are produced that just look like nothing. It just looked like a lump of glass, or it just looks like a little inkwell or something like that. But then like if you hold it, you know, it has like this really powerful kind of, you know, like a power around it where you can actually like feel the person's memory, like you can become that person, like as long as you're holding it in your hand. And even though, like I said, when adults produce it, it doesn't you know, it's only like a very strong memory. Like it'll come for the, like, there's one in there that, you know, if you hold it, it's like, you know, the woman's like giving birth to a baby or something like that. But because they sacrifice kids in it, I think because they, you know, their whole lives can be like embedded in this one trinket. Whereas adults, it's usually just kind of like a fleeting, like a particularly powerful moment that they had. And that just kind of, you know, it just registered into this trinket. So I really, really liked the idea of just these little objects that looked kind of like worthless, but were also like kind of power totems of like holding people's memories and stuff. I thought that was like a really cool idea. But I will say that, one, I think there was like too much going on in the sense that there were too many antagonists. You know what I'm saying? I did like the idea of, you know, this antique dealer going after this particular trinket because it was his daughter's entire memories and him wanting to essentially bring her back from the dead by, you know, kidnapping a child and wiping her memory clean and stuff like that. I kind of feel like that should have been the main story. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like there was so much other stuff going on. Like, I don't think you needed the subplot with Mrs. Darwin, you know, the native, because she didn't have anything to do with the well or anything like that. She was just this wacky old woman, or, you know, this crazy old woman that wanted custody of Betsy, the 10-year-old girl. And so it was like an additional, you know, villain. I also thought you probably didn't need the antique dealer's hot assistant who was just out to get money, because I think that, I don't know, even though they were sort of a little bit working at cross purposes, I really don't think you needed that additional, because I think like the story of this spiritualist cult who had figured out, you know, if we sacrifice a child in this, you know, during a rainy season near this well or whatever, you know, we can essentially make a time portal. We can like hop ahead into the future. And it's like, you know, and some of the people from back then that like went into the well and then they were coming, you know, into the present now, and like they didn't really know where they were waiting for the other people. I think that was enough of a good story on its own, without all these sort of like extraneous details. Because like I said, as much as I enjoyed Mrs. Darwin's over-the-top little pudgy grandma apple pie like psychosis, like I really did like that because she was like a total nutcase. But considering that she didn't really have any links or any tie to the actual larger story, she was just kind of like, oh, and then there's this other situation. So I really thought that was kind of unnecessary. And it was kind of the same with, you know, the assistant woman to the antique dealer, whose name was Elizabeth, who, you know, she was just essentially always like sneaking around the property, like looking for these little trinkets for her boss. And she was like very, very obviously like trying to, you know, get into Phil's pants so she could get like information about these objects and stuff like that. And another thing too is that Phil seemed a little bit clueless. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, yes, I understand that, you know, you're just like a normal person and your sister just died and you just inherited her, you know, your 10-year-old niece. You're now her guardian and he's like very used to being a bachelor and everything and, you know, and being a loner. And now he's got this kid and he's like, you know, he steps up because he knew that that was, you know, that that might eventually happen. So he's not like resentful about it or anything. But, you know, and I get that that was that he was just doing that and living his life. And you wouldn't necessarily know all of this stuff about, you know, time traveling through wells and like, you know, memory trinkets and things like that. So I can see how you might be kind of slow on the uptake. But sometimes, like during some of these scenes, like particularly between him and Elizabeth, where like Elizabeth just, you know, shows up at the house and it's just like, hey, what you got in here? What's this? What are you doing? You know, and she's just very obviously being like really, really nosy. And it seems like he's just like, oh, well, she's pretty and maybe blah, blah, blah. So it just seems like he's kind of like not, he's just real slow on the uptake. You know what I mean? And I feel like maybe in real life, he would have like clued into shit like quicker. He takes a very long time to understand that Mrs. Darwin is like not to be trusted. He just seemed very gullible. Not even gullible. It just seemed like he just was kind of out of it. Like he didn't have any idea like what was going on. And he's just, I don't know. He seemed like a very passive protagonist. It seemed like a lot of people were just kind of like doing all these, you know, there was like all these little plots and schemes going on behind, and even Betsy like knew, because she knew what the objects were and stuff. So it's like all these people knew what was going on, and he was just kind of like, oh well, suppose so, you know what I mean? So it was just that kind of thing. So it seemed like there was a lot of stuff going on around him, but he wasn't really like as actively involved in the process, I guess, as, you know, a protagonist would tend to be. And you could argue that he's not the main protagonist, because like I said, there are a lot of characters in this, and there are a lot of antagonists. There are a lot of people that had their own agendas, you know, that knew about the trinkets and knew about the well and knew about the people, you know, that were jumping through time in the well and stuff like that. But I just feel like there was too much going on for me to like get really, really engaged in the main narrative. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, I liked bits of it. I liked the atmosphere of it. I liked, you know, kind of the over-the-top evilness of some of the characters, which I thought was kind of interesting. There's not a lot of female characters in that. Well, I guess there are. But it's like, I just thought it was very funny that, you know, Mrs. Darwin is like just this crazy psychotic. She kind of reminded me, because I'm watching The Handmaid's Tale, she kind of reminds me of like an Aunt Lydia type of character, if you've seen that show. She's like, that's who I was picturing. Or like, what's-her-face from Harry Potter, the one that wears like all the pink in the movies. I can't remember what her name is right now, the one that got carried off by the centaurs. Yeah, she kind of reminds me of that type of character. So it's like that character was like very entertaining, and the character of Elizabeth was very entertaining, but she was just like this completely amoral, you know, she was just like, I just want to get rich and I just want to find, you know, these antiques. And it's like she would just like kind of do anything to do that. So it's like it seemed like a lot of those characters were just like a little bit like over the top evil, which like I said was entertaining, but I don't know. It was just kind of like strange. So the whole like experience of rereading this was actually kind of strange. I don't know. So like I said, if it sounds cool, like I said, it's not scary. It's not exactly a ghost story. It's not exactly a fantasy. It's just kind of like a spooky, atmospheric sort of fantasy, but more like it's more like just magical realism type thing. I kind of feel like this might occupy, if you guys remember like when I reviewed The Lost Apothecary a while back, which this isn't really, the story of that isn't anything like this, but it gave me the same kind of vibe where it's just like it's not necessarily a genre story, but it's just kind of like something with just like a little bit of, you know, mostly set in the modern day with some going back and forth in time, like I said, which got a little bit confusing too. Because like I said, there's a lot of characters and I couldn't, sometimes I was like, oh, who's this now? And like, you know, it does tell you like when it goes back into the past, but I don't know. I feel like I got more of out of it like the first time I read it. I think this time I couldn't get into it as much and I couldn't get as engaged with it as I think I did the first time. And I don't know if that was just because like that's the headspace I'm in right now and, you know, whatever. Because that does happen sometimes. Like sometimes I'll read a book one time and, you know, and it doesn't really like click with me, but then I'll read it again later and I'm just like, oh my God, why didn't I like this the first time or whatever. But I feel like I had like the opposite experience with this, where it's like the first time I feel like I maybe really dug it. And then this time I still liked it, but I was having a hard time kind of like latching on to it, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? And I think it might have been too, because it flipped back and forth in time so much that I couldn't really get as engaged with the characters, like, cause you didn't know them long enough. You know what I mean? It was just kind of like, cause it started out here and then it went there and then it went there and then it went there. And then, so I was like kind of keeping track, and I couldn't keep track of everyone's motives. Like why, you know, why was this person looking for this? And, you know, who was this again? And like, you know, when did this person pop out? So I kind of feel like, I don't know. So I don't know if it was just like, cause the way it was written was vague, or I wasn't paying enough attention to it. Cause it is kind of a complex story. So you really do kind of have to pay attention to all the timelines, because a lot of the past timelines and future timelines like do tie in together, but sometimes it took me a minute to be like, oh, well, wait a minute, like who's this and like when did they come here and how are they related to that person? So it's just kind of like, it's one of those ones where you really, really have to like pay attention to everyone's relationships with one another to really get anything out of it. But that said, if you really like kind of mild fantasy or like kind of ghosty magical realism-y type of stuff, then give this one a whirl. Like I said, I've never really read any of his other stuff, so I don't know. I know he's probably more known for fantasy or for more steampunk type stuff, which, you know, that's cool too. But I'll probably, you know, give one of his other books a try as well and just see like what other kind of stuff that he writes. But, you know, for this one, it was just kind of like, it was just okay. You know what I'm saying? You know, and then I hate to say that, but it was just, I mean, I read it and some of it was like really page turning, but then some of it was a little bit of a chore to get through. So, you know, so there is that. So it was just kind of like, it was a little bit of a strange schizophrenic reading experience for me, I guess. But yeah. And also I will say too, that like the description on the back of the book is not inaccurate, but it's not really all that accurate either. So know that going into it. Like if you read the back of the book and it's like, yeah, that's kind of the story, but that's probably only like 25% of the story. There's a whole bunch of other shit going on too. And it's not, I don't know. I know they try to be vague, like so they get readers in and stuff, but it's not misrepresentation, but it's just not exactly what the story is or what the main thrust of the story is, I guess. But yeah, so anyway, this has been my Tomes of Terror book review of, as I mentioned earlier, The Rainy Season by James P. Blaylock from 1999. So, you know, like I said, if it sounds like something that would be up your alley, then by all means, check it out. There's not really a lot of reviews of it online I've seen, so I don't really know how popular it was. I couldn't even find any other like booktubers talking about it or anything, but you know, like I said, I just got it as a present like a long time ago and wanted to reread it for the show, so now I've done that. So yeah, that'll do it for this one. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.